24 before 12, there is a thing called the world's best restaurants. What a brilliant idea. It was announced in New York during the week that it's coming to Melbourne.
Yep,
next
2017.
Year, in 2017. We spoke on the breakfast program with the guy who runs it, and I said, I don't like to mention money, discuss money with friends, but have we paid for the privilege? Because I think we have.
Yeah.
So imagine that. You set up a website called World's Best Restaurants, and they said they'd have 1,000 people, 1,000 foodies. The review panel.
Judges, basically.
The judges, yep. Yeah. If you were judge on the world's best restaurant panel, what would you choose as your number one? Or have you been to any of the restaurants on the top 50? Have they published the top 50 yet?
Yes, yeah.
And Attica was on it?
Yeah, we were 33, I'm going
to
say.
96900693. We still have Maha tickets to give away, but you've got to be able to go on the night of June 28. Danny Valant.
Say whatever you like.
Food writer.
I'm here anyway.
Cook from DannyValantCooking.com.au. You have been to the number one restaurant in the world, which is in Modena in Italy. It's called
Osteria Francescana, and I was there almost a year ago exactly.
How did you get in? Was it rort time, or did you queue up like everyone else?
So I booked from here. So they opened the reservations a few months before, and I just booked like a regular punter. A few emails were exchanged, and yeah, I managed to get a table. I sort of planned our trip to Europe around a couple of different restaurants, and that was one of them.
Okay, Osteria Francescana. Have you seen the special Chef's Table on Netflix?
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
If you've got Netflix, look up Chef's Table, and the number one, the very first show
episode
in that documentary is about this particular restaurant, and mostly about its chef, Massimo Bottura.
Yes, he's quite a character. So a very arty guy and I guess very outward looking. So Italian food is very parochial, very inward looking. It's really all about what Nonna does and you just try to replicate it. But Massimo is quite radical and was really not fated in Italy until recently because he took tradition and twisted it. And that is not really done.
Right, tell us, he's got a famous thing called the Five Ages of Parmigiano.
Yeah.
Is that still on the menu?
Yeah, so he does have some classic dishes that I think he'd be very hard-pressed to take off the menu. You can eat the classics or his classics, or you can eat a seasonal menu. But we sort of sprinkled it, you know, I was like, just bring whatever. Like, we want to eat everything. We want to have the whole experience.
Isn't he the one who says that the tasting menu is dead?
Look, you can eat so many different ways and the tasting menu can be dead to any person that prefers not to eat like that, but the tasting menu is very much alive in a lot of restaurants around the world. I mean, look, it can be an overwhelming way to eat because you have so many dishes, and then when you eat at a restaurant like Osteria Francescana, each dish can be quite complex. So, for example, that dish you mentioned about the Parmigiano, Modena or Emilia Romagna is the home of Parmigiano, so it's beautiful cheese that, you know, we love here, and, you know, they revere it there.
Do they revere it? Remember the start of the documentary starts with the earthquake, and it takes you inside
the factory.
Where they were storing the wheels of Parmigiano, and they've all collapsed and crunched each other.
Yeah.
And
so that is a tragedy. I mean, that is, you know, like a beautiful museum burning down or something for those people who absolutely love that cheese. And they don't only love it, you know, they love it as it ages. So this dish highlights different textures and ages of Parmesan. So he creates a foam, an air, a crisp, all these different ways of dealing with the cheese, but each one is at a different age. So you taste that maturing cheese and you have these different textures. It's quite a rhapsody, really, to eat it. But, you know, it is a dish. You got to go with the flow.
Tell us how was it, though, in the documentary where they test whether the Parmigiano is ready to eat by hitting it with the same thing that the doctor uses to test your reflexes in your knee. It's just the sound of it, and they know by the sound when it's ready.
Well, that sort of sensual approach to life, really, is so much part of the Italian way. And, yeah, this idea that you can listen to your cheese and it basically tells you when it wants to be eaten, I love the poetry of that.
So, Danny, if you planned this trip in Europe around a number of restaurants that you really wanted to try, and I assume quite a few of them will have been on this list.
Yeah.
Having been to the number one, like, did it surprise you at all that that was at number one? What makes it such a great restaurant?
So it was number two when I was there, and now they've swapped. One and two are swapped. I mean, I think those lists, I mean, they're obviously very subjective and,
there's a fair bit of bulltish about them.
They're pretty silly, really.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm a previous voter on this list. And obviously.
Back the truck up. What? You've been a voter on World's Best Restaurant?
Yeah. This one, a couple of years ago.
Who'd you vote number one?
Well, you vote for.
How does it work?
Do you rate?
I think actually I might have signed something to say I'm not allowed to talk about it. But anyway, it's just us here, right? So I think you vote. You name seven restaurants you've been to, and you give a you talk about when you went there, what you ate, and you know a couple of lines on why you think it's among the best restaurants in the world. And you have to vote for a couple of restaurants that are outside of your area. So we're here in Oceania. And so I had to vote for a couple of restaurants outside of that region. But obviously...
So you had to, you had to hop on a plane and fly there to do it, did you?
Well, you have to have been.
Or did
you
they
have
pay
to
for
have
you
been.
To fly?
No, oh, no, no. There's no money involved. Well, right. Yeah. So, yeah, you have to have travelled. That's fine. Like, I didn't travel especially for this, but I happened to have been to Europe. But, you know, I'd been to Europe. I hadn't been to the States that year. Yeah. Yeah. I hadn't been to China.
So which were the two on your list that was outside Oceania?
So a restaurant that isn't on the list because it's not really a world's 50 best type of restaurant called Le Manoir Quatre Saisons in England.
Mm-hmm. Four Seasons.
And it's a very beautiful restaurant, a fine dining restaurant, quite a traditional restaurant compared to these. This is a kind of hipster list. And the people, all these kinds of lists, they sort of, you know, perpetuate themselves. So people that are interested in this list will then go and eat at the restaurants on this list. I did it. And then they'll vote for them again.
So it's self-perpetuating.
Totally. Yeah. Which is not to say it's bad, but lists are always to be taken with a large pinch of flaked Murray River salt.
Yeah, I'm
with
you.
Do you think Australia should only have one restaurant in the top 50? Does that make sense to you?
Well, it'll be interesting to see after Tourism Victoria has done some very good work in bringing the competition here next year. I think obviously there's going to be more restaurants appearing, and Australia's got great food, great cuisine, and there's
197 countries in the world. So if they all got one restaurant on the list, there'd be 197 restaurants on the list. But I don't suppose you know, Sierra Leone or Burkina Faso is natural.
There's maybe one restaurant in Africa.
One.
The Test Kitchen.
Yes.
Where's that?
South Africa.
In Cape Town. There's, I think, one restaurant in China and one in India.
Wow.
Now, that's a large swathe of the world's population that we're ruling out.
One in China, one in India. That is two restaurants from 2.6 billion people.
Right.
Correct.
Mm. Now, people are, you know, but it's not this type of restaurant for the most part. So a lot of restaurants that do have those sort of tasting menus, those degustation style dining, the kind of chefs that appear on Chef's Table, the Netflix doc that you mentioned. There's nothing wrong with this list. I think it's great. I think it highlights some really, really fantastic food in different places around the world, but it's not comprehensive.
And our mate Ben Shuri from Attica is on that particular series, Chef's Table on Netflix. Yeah. And Modena is the home of Enzo Ferrari and Luciano Pavarotti.
Yep.
And I remember that story. He's very much a Modena boy, Luciano, because he's staying at a hotel in London and he woke up in the middle of the night and rang room service and demanded a wheel of Parmigiana.
I love it.
Imagine what his beard was like.
Yeah.
Danny, you've got your new website, Danny Valent Cooking, Valent, V-A-L-E-N-T, and Danny with an I, dannyvalentcooking.com.au.
Not .au, .com.
Just .com.
So that's pretty wonderful if you have a Thermomix, and people with Thermomixes are always looking for good ideas. This is a website where you'll get videos and recipes all through the year, lots of different things to do, so definitely worth having a look at that.
And actually Ben Shuri is going to appear on my website in a month or two, cooking in the Thermomix at my house.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Attica, well, that's Muhammad to the mountain, isn't it?
That's it, yes.
Danny Valent, food, nice to catch up.
Thanks for having me.